Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Crimes, Killers, Cults.
And beer. And blood.
Yeah, and blood.
Beautiful, beautiful flowing blood. It makes me so happy. Yeah.
Just one crazy Florida man and one crazy California man drinking beer and talking about true crime.
The Vampire of Dusseldorf.
Yeah, once again, we have Matthew Brockmeyer from Murder Coaster.
Howdy, folks.
Helping out. We appreciate the hell out of it. Go check out his podcast. And you know, if you like this, you'll like them. So,
Murder Coaster.
I'm really honored to have you on with us, helping out with these two episodes.
And this is my pleasure.
This is actually take two. We've already recorded this once, but it mysteriously disappeared. So this is take two. That's why I'm a couple days late. That's why I'm a couple days late on releasing it, because we had to coordinate and get another time set up to where we could both record this episode. So if you're listening to this episode on the third, like Sunday night, it was recorded earlier in the day. So anyway, you were telling me something about you and your co-host Krista both have books coming out.
Krista's book just came out on the 1st. The Daughters of Black Island. It's already an Amazon bestseller.
Oh, wow.
It's getting rave reviews. Check it out, The Daughters of Black Island.
Congratulations.
Yeah, well, I don't have anything coming out, but I do have a novel out there, Kind Nepenthe, about on a pot farm in the hills of Humboldt County, where I reside. It's a tale of murder and hauntings and ghosts. And I have two books of short stories.
Awesome. We'll be sure to. Off to a great start. We'll be sure to link those in the episode description for you and for Krista.
Thank you.
So we didn't really. I don't know why we didn't do that before, but. So that's really cool.
Yeah.
So anyway, when we left off, Peter Curtin had just been arrested for the burglaries that he had done. And at this point, he's killed two of his classmates. And he had also, trying to remember, he had already started murdering people, raping and murdering at this point. And I believe he had also just gotten married at that point, too. Like when we wrapped up part one, I think.
I don't think we got to that yet.
No?
If I'm correct, yeah.
Peter Curtin attempted to talk his way out of with the police after he had been arrested. You know, he tried it using a double speak and misdirection, but the police weren't buying it. And he spent hours in a holding cell trying to figure out why he had been arrested, but he couldn't come up with anything because nobody knew about the murders that he had already committed. So finally, the officers showed up and began questioning him with their fists. Little punchy. They start rattling off evidence for all the burglaries that had been happening, as well as fires that he had started. And this was meant to soften him up for interrogation. And they were having fun. I mean, this is Germany we're talking about.
Deutschland, über alles. Yeah.
Yeah. So he wound up being sent to the military prison in Brieg. And Peter did what he did, trying to work the system. And he was serving 8 years. And it was originally 6, but he managed to have a total of 2 years added for being a douchebag.
The old douchebag clause gets him again.
Yep. Why you add me? It's not illegal to be douchebag. Oh, shit, that wasn't even a German accent. That was a bad Japanese accent. Oh my God. I'll leave the accents to you today. Damn, that was horrible. Oh my God. Barfing Nugent. So he was released in April of 1921, and he had to choose what he was going to do. Go legit, because he was now 38 years old and matured, or go back to his antics of the past, realizing that if he had been caught for any of the murders that he'd done, he'd be killed for it. Because in Germany, they don't take kindly to murder. Well, not yet anyway. So he chose to go legit, or at least to try to. So he tracked down his sister. Yeah, the one that he had raped.
And, I'm sure she was glad to see him.
Oh yeah. Yeah, you're right. We hadn't gotten to the marriage yet, because we're getting there now. So she had made a good life for herself in Altenburg. She had gotten married, had a couple of kids. And she had left her horrific past behind, and she was happy until Peter showed up. But her husband was all for opening the door to her family members. He was like, yeah, come on in. Any family member of my wife's is my family too. Welcome, buddy.
They say blood is thicker than water. Yes. Blood.
Blood.
I love the blood.
Blood. But apparently she hadn't told him about her past, or at least about Peter. And she was terrified, but she hid it very well. And Peter said that he wanted to find work and settle down. And he just needed a place to stay until he got back on his feet. And he promised to help out in exchange for the roof over his head and for food. And Peter mentioned that he had been a soldier and had been locked away. And he spun it as if he had been taken prisoner without saying it. But that was true from a certain point of view.
Yeah,
but of course he spun it to make it like a war hero, which made his brother-in-law support the troops.
I was captured for being a douchebag.
Yeah, we just kind of left out the part where I went AWOL. But it worked, and the brother-in-law opened the doors for Peter, and as long as he needed to get back on his feet. And he had no idea of Peter's knowledge of his wife. horrible situation. But Peter had found a job and he was being friendly, so maybe it changed. He did well at his job and began climbing the union ladder. And he was hanging out at his sister's candy shop one day, and a woman named Auguste Sheriff came in. Sharif Nabidah.
Sharif don't like it.
Rock the Casbah.
Always thought it was Cat Box.
It's Casbah. Cat Box? Rock the Cat Box. Gotta be careful with that. You can wind up with a really stinky mess.
Yeah.
So Auguste, I'm not going to say her last name. If I say her last name again, I'm just going to say Casbah. Nah. But Peter was interested. He began talking to her. And at this point, his sister had no reason to cock block Peter. I mean,
interesting, you know, use of the word there, yeah.
But the thing is, I mean, you know, it appeared that Peter had turned over a new leaf. So, yeah, different times. But I don't know. Or maybe it's just...
You live in Florida. I don't know. You tell
me. Hey! Damn! All of Florida hating.
I love Florida. I love the insanity.
Oh, we do too. You know why there's all these Florida man stories?
Because Florida people are crazy?
Florida's no more crazy than anywhere else. It's just Florida makes all, like, every arrest record, every story available for public consumption, like, immediately.
I don't know. I would never live somewhere like that. I live in the most normal place in the world.
You live in California.
Nothing weird ever happens here.
90% of the serial killers from the 70s and the 80s came from California. The other 10% came from Florida. No. Yeah. I've been to California.
Very normal.
Yeah, very, very. Oh, man. So Peter seemed to have turned over a new leaf, and now for the most obvious put a knife in that we've ever had on this show.
Rink, 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 rink.
Turned out that Auguste had also been in jail, and she had also been a prostitute. She had been married to an abusive man that she killed. So Peter had no problem with her past. In fact, he liked it, and he could relate to her. And they even waited until they were married before having sex.
Mm. You believe that?
Not really. Ryan Green says it's true. But then after a couple years, they moved to Dusseldorf, where they were established. They were able to establish themselves quickly. But as usual, Peter got bored with the norm and began having affairs. And the first was a servant named Teed, which is kind of ironic that we have T-I-E-D-E. It's kind of ironic because the next episode that we're doing is on Bernie Teed. Mm. You familiar with that story?
No, I'm not.
It's the guy. It's the story that the movie Bernie with Jack Black was made after. True story.
Oh, I'm trying to remember.
But I'm doing that episode with Jessica from Texas True Crime.
Nice. I assume it takes place in Texas?
It does. She picked the topic. Nice. But she picked a good one because it's the amount of crazy in that story is up to 11. So a little preview, another collab with another podcast coming up next week. And I'm just going to say right now, we're probably going to, we've been releasing our episodes on Friday, probably going to switch to Sunday for the time being. Just easier that way.
Sunday, Sunday, Sunday.
The next episode of Crimes, Killers, Cults, and Beer. it's just easier that way. For at least for the time being, we may wind up going back to releasing on Friday. But for the time being, Sunday. So Peter spoiled T with gifts and affection, and she had a sexual appetite like he did. And, she liked to be choked, for example. Well, not exactly. But Peter convinced her that she did.
You like it, admit it.
You like it.
I mean, some people do like it. That the lack of air to the lack of oxygen to the brain heightens the erotic experience. A lot of people die constantly while autoerotic asphyxiation.
In
masturbating
excess.
With a... Yes, he did it. Yeah.
That was a pun.
Double entendre for your pleasure.
It was choking in excess, literally and figuratively.
Unfortunately, it happens to young boys a lot. Their mothers will come in their room and find them hanging their blue with their dick in their hand, which I can imagine would be an awful sight.
I've never done the sexual side of that, where I choke myself off as I'm rubbing one out. But
I think the lady doth protest too much.
What I have done, when I was a teenager, we would play the choking game where one of us would just, where one of our friends, we'd stand up against the wall and then, they'd choke us out and we'd slump to the ground and then come back.
Generation X, ladies and gentlemen, this is what we did for fun. Before the internet, we would take deep breaths and have our friends choke us out so
choke
we
us fell out
to the ground. That was our that and sniffing glue. That was our big big thing.
And we
God you have Google.
And we even filmed it with a video camera.
Oh, you guys are getting wild with it.
So that we could see what we were doing while we were out. And it's just, it was kind of lackluster. But that feeling that you get when you come back is like
We used to huff Freon. Very. I can't even talk because all the brain cells I fried doing it.
Oh, man. But yep, Generation X. That's why we're the last badass generation. We literally tried to kill each other for shits and giggles.
There was nothing else to do, honestly. I've seen that Laverne and Shirley episode too many times. I didn't want to watch it again. Just fucking put me out of my goddamn misery.
And when I say that she was a servant, I don't mean that she was like a slave or indentured servitude or whatever. She was basically like a maid at a motel or something like that.
You think she wore the black and white fancy French maid dress?
Yeah, with the lederhosen.
It's a lot of clothes there.
But anyway, he convinced her that she did like to be choked. Peter's dark passenger was creeping back up from the shadows. Eventually, he got tired of Teed, and he moved on to another woman, Mac. Sounds like a Klingon word.
Or like the Japanese robots, right?
Yeah. But he got brutal with her, and he convinced her that his actions were legal, so she just had to take it. And there were many more like that, and his wife had no clue. So finally, Teed reported Peter to the police for seduction, and Mac reported him for rape. And now, what did we say that? What did we say that?
Seduction is a lower form of rape. It's rape that's used by means of either blackmail or like just talking someone into it. It's weird. It's like date rape, where it's not as violent. You know what I mean? It's not a violent form of rape, and you usually know each other, but it's still like a non-permissive sex.
Oh, okay.
I'm like,
kind of like what Rocky did to Adrian in the first Rocky movie.
Yes. You heard it here. Rocky Balboa is a rapist.
That scene was creepy as hell looking back on it.
It is. I mean, it's a dark movie. It's very dirty, grungy 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Just, yeah.
But he
not cool, man.
No, that scene was just kind of where he just basically, I mean, yeah.
Holds her up against the wall, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was rape. Auguste stood by her man trying to get the charges dropped or reduced, and somehow it worked. And he was released after 6 months. But when he was released, they were broke and they had nothing. And he only had 3 more months to go. But Auguste had sold everything and drained their bank accounts to get Peter out. He only had 3 months to go.
3 months is a long time when you're in the joint, man.
It is, but if you're gonna be dirt poor as a result of all the legal fees and everything that you're doing, to just do the 3 months.
Maybe as a sexual predator, he might have thought he was gonna not make it through. You never know.
That could be.
Might have been targeted.
But then again, nobody knows he's doing that yet.
Hmm.
So,
I don't think as a psychopath, you're like, a lot of times I don't think these people really think too deeply about the future or what the consequences of their actions.
Probably not. If they did, they wouldn't do it. I mean, and that's one thing I don't get about serial killers in general. They know that murder's bad and good. You know, but they know that they're ultimately going to get caught. They probably
uncontrollable urge, man.
Yeah, I guarantee you, not one of these people says, you know, ever thought to themselves, "I will never get caught."
I think they do. I think they do think that it's part of their as a narcissist, because, you know, they're not only psychopaths, but they have narcissistic tendencies as well. They think they're smarter than the cops. You know, I mean, they'll start sending, like he does. He starts sending letters to the cops.
Right.
It's like the stupidest thing you can do. You know what I mean? But they think they're smarter. They relish being smarter.
The stupidest thing you can do is ask the cops if they can trace a floppy disk.
No, absolutely not. There's no way of doing that.
No way of tracking you. Oh, the BTK redo is coming before too long.
If it does link to a church, you won't be able to know which church, will you?
Right. Yeah. Oh, let me tell you, in a couple weeks, I have stumbled across a documentary a subject that nobody's covered before.
And well, that's obviously someone did if it's a documentary.
As far as the podcast. And I'm not going to, I'll tell you what it is when we're done, but I'm not going to say it on here because I don't want to give other podcasters to get to it. Cause I got a few episodes that have to come out before this one, but it's in regards to World War II, but it's something that you never would have thought of.
Oh, hear that, ladies and gentlemen? And so, a wild one coming up.
And it'll be a two-parter. It'll be a two-part episode as well. So, well, stay tuned, people, because I got something good coming. So, I guess they wanted to leave Dusseldorf, but Peter insisted on staying. And his urges were getting harder to maintain, and he needed violence. He needed blood. Go ahead.
Blood, the precious, precious blood. Oh, it makes me so happy. Oh, I just creamed in my pants, man. I just love the blood so much.
Only that blood, blood. Never gonna drink your blood. Never mind. I'm not gonna hurt you. How in the hell did I involve Rick Astley in Peter Curtin episode? And Rick rolled everybody. So on February 3rd, 1929, he couldn't take it anymore. Nothing mattered. And he and his wife had put together a pretty comfortable living situation, though. But Peter didn't care about that. He wants blood.
Must have the blood.
On February 30, he met a middle-aged woman named Apollonia Kuhn.
Apollonia.
There it is. That's it.
Belonging to Apollo. Right. The Greek god of archery.
Apollonia belonged to Peter.
It's the name of the Don Corleone's fiance and the Godfather and bride in the Godfather Part 2.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. The one that couldn't drive very well.
Yes.
So Peter was like the creep that he was. He was hiding in some bushes and, you know, waiting for somebody to tickle his fancy. And he leaped out of the bushes and went, "Wah!" And he grabbed Apollonia and pulled her into the bushes, ordering her not to scream. You gotta scream. So
it's the old school way to find your true love, I suppose.
One step above hitting her over the head with a club and dragging her back into the cave by her hair.
Seduction.
So she tried handing over her bag to Peter, but that wasn't what Peter wanted. So he pulled a pair of what?
Scissors. Cutting edge technology.
He pulled a pair of scissors from his coat and he stabbed her with them, and he covered her mouth and then repeatedly stabbed her. Her lungs had been punctured and blood was pouring out of her, and Peter had stabbed her many times and continued even after he thought that she was dead. She would be found hours later, but Peter obviously was long gone at that point, but somehow Apollonia had survived. And doctors couldn't understand exactly how she survived. Like, how the hell did you do that? You know? kind of like,
yeah, what is that? Mechana, the deuce, the from the gods, from Apollo, has come down to grant the gift of life.
But Peter carried on like nothing had happened, although he had a new spring in his step, and he went home and he realized he could be happy as long as he could live a double life. It's like, hey, I rape, I kill, I love my wife.
As long as there's blood.
Blood. Blood and R word.
I think a lot of times he would actually just ejaculate right in his pants from the sight of blood.
Yeah, he did. Guess it's a good thing he didn't become a mortician.
You say John Wayne Gacy worked at a mortuary for a while and got in Las Vegas, got fired for fucking the bodies.
Did he really?
Well, he definitely worked there and he definitely got fired. And when that rumor came out, he vigorously denied it from prison. But he's very reliable. So I believe
him. Oh, yeah. Me too.
I believe everything he's ever said, both sides of everything.
Oh, man. I could tell a John Wayne Gacy related story right now, but I won't because it would take too long. But the next day, the story hit the newspapers and Peter just lost it. He hadn't disguised himself, so Apollonia could ID him. But lucky for Peter and unlucky for the rest of the world, Apollonia couldn't remember anything when she came to. So it was celebration time. Yee-hoo, let's party!
Yay.
Yeah, I don't like the way Peter Curtin parties. His version of celebration time was grabbing 9-year-old Rosa Olinger off the sidewalk and dragged her into the bushes. He strangled her unconscious, and then he started in with the scissors. He stabbed her in the stomach with the scissors and then used them to mutilate her genitals, and he ejaculated several times as he did this. He stabbed her in the heart through her rib cage. Then he stabbed her in the brain through her temple.
Yeah.
And then that's kind of like an unintentional calling card for Peter.
I guess he's like, it's gruesome to think about, but he's probably looking in their face. So,
he aims right
for the side of their head. It's terribly frightening. He's a terribly frightening individual. It's terrifying stuff.
Yeah, I think
monster.
Probably in the scary factor, I think he's up there with Panzram. I mean, it's just, you know, a man that just doesn't give a fuck about anything other than satisfying his urges and everything. Panzram wanted to get caught. But I don't think Peter did, though. But
yeah,
he then gathered some Peter juice onto his fingers and shoved them into her vagina. And he then stashed her under a bridge and returned that night with kerosene, doused her with it, and then lit her on fire. And he ejaculated again, more Peter juice.
Yeah, the fire gets them off as well. Mm-hmm. A lot of these guys are like that. There's something about the rampage of fire, the unbridled just violence of it. They also like to see the destruction it wreaks. And also, like, you know, they'll get off seeing the people come rushing out of the buildings and the firemen trying to put it out. It all makes them terribly gleeful.
Mental Illness Theater is about to do an episode on Robert Orr, the arsonist in California.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one.
Very interesting case.
Yeah, I suggested it to him. He suggested Gary Plache to us a while back, and that, well, you know how that worked out for us. but I suggested that one to him. He's just like, oh hell yeah, that's, I'm doing it. So
very nice.
But so the The body was found the next day, and it took several more days before she could be identified. And this time, Peter got to take pleasure from the news and the fear that was gripping everyone in Dusseldorf. But this didn't soothe anything in Peter. He wanted more blood. Do it. You do it better than I do.
Blood, more blood. He's insatiable.
So 5 days later, Peter was hunting again, and police linked the attempted murder of Apollonia and the murder of Rosa together. And he wasn't finding any prospects, so he just settled on an older man, 45-year-old Rudolf Scheer. Beggars can't be choosers, I guess.
I mean, it's really wild to see him change victim types like that. It's very rare.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, like Panzram, I don't think Panzram ever murdered a woman.
Yeah.
I don't think that he did. I could be wrong, even though I did six hours on Panzram. But I should remember, but I don't. But
I mean, Jeffrey Dahmer didn't kill a woman either. He's, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is there any evidence that Peter Curtin was bisexual?
No, he's none. I don't think.
They usually kill what they love.
Right. And he killed this old, he only killed three males. He killed this guy, and then he killed his two classmates when he was a kid.
I think he stabbed a few guys.
Yeah, he did stab a couple, but the only deaths that he did was the two classmates and old Rudolph here. He snuck up behind Rudolph and stabbed him in the neck with the scissors. Peter wasn't enjoying this as much as killing women or girls, but he had to finish Rudolph off. Rudolph had spun around and he had seen Peter, so he finished him off by stabbing him through the temple. But unfortunately for Peter, no Peter juice this time. Oh, no, it's just... yuck. Ugh. But this was quickly discovered, and police had to disperse the crowds who had shown up to get a look, and Peter was in the group listening as people talked about a possible spree killer. These two murders and one attack happened in less than 10 days. So he's borderline berserker mode here.
We're ramping up.
Mm-hmm. See, you got a Charles Manson shirt on.
I do. Old Charlie.
I got a Dolphin shirt on.
In love, there is no wrong, man.
The Dolphins.
No sense makes sense.
The Dolphins beat the Commanders, or the Redskins.
Oops, yeah, but the Dolphins can't beat the eternal soul of a free love, one mind, man.
45.
Think about that, Jack.
45 to 15. A good old-fashioned ass-whipping, Florida style. But anyway. Yeah, that's why I had to start this episode at 4:30 because I had to watch the Dolphins game. So anyway, I actually had a date over to watch the Dolphins game.
All right.
And she listens to the podcast. So hi.
Hello.
I'm not going to say her name out of
your date is a privacy. Sick, twisted man.
No, she likes the podcast. She's listened to several episodes and actually talked more about true crime than we did watching the Dolphins game.
Yeah, there you go.
So, but the stabbing was through the temple as usual. So police determined that it was in fact a spree killer, and they announced it to the public. And Peter just simply found new hunting grounds. So. From March to July, he strangled four different women, and there's no report of these. It's more likely that Peter just made them up, or maybe he tried to do this and they escaped.
Are these the ones he strangled?
He said that he strangled them.
Yeah. Well, a lot of times people don't realize that their victim is still alive when they're strangling them. You know, and once he gets off, I think, you know what I mean? He looks down, the body seems dead. He's shot his load. And then they eventually wake up.
Yeah, well,
you hear about that a lot. People like strangling people and then like going to do something with the body, and all of a sudden the person's back up again, and they got to redo it.
Yeah.
I hate that.
I mean, BTK even said, it's just like, you know, strangling people isn't like what it is on the TV. It's a lot harder. It's a lot harder than I thought it would be. Yeah, you know, fuck off, BTK.
He's such a douchebag. I hate that guy.
I really hate that guy.
You know, he's a... somebody told me, I can't remember who it was that told me this, but somebody told me that in prison, BTK is like a total Karen.
I believe it. Have you ever seen the applications you have to talk? You have to fill out to talk to him or send him a letter?
No.
You can find him online. It's like ridiculous. He's got like this 5-page questionnaire before you could ever like try to talk to him or anything. It's like, it's ridiculous. It sounds like something a Karen would write, you know, the serial killer.
Well, what he does is, I wish I could remember who told me this, but like in prison, he bitches about anything and everything that he possibly can. You know, it's just, he's always snitching on people.
He's a narcissist,
like,
man.
Yeah. And, but it's to the point to where, like they would make if he reported somebody for just annoying him or whatever, they'd just get on the mic, get on the loudspeaker. All right, whoever's bothering BTK, knock it off. We're sick of hearing him whine. Oh God, what a bitch!
I mean, he's kind of literally a bitch. You ever see those photographs of him all tied up with the makeup and the dresses and stuff?
Yeah, I have.
So disturbing.
But Peter claimed he tossed one of these women into the Rhine, and that wasn't likely either because somebody would have seen the body.
I mean, maybe like, the Wolfman of Hanover, Fritz Hamann, was throwing bodies into the river there in Germany right at the same time. And it took them a lot. They didn't even find them until they were already completely decomposed, and even then, like, there was like so much grave robbery going on at the time that they assumed grave robbers had thrown the parts in there.
Yeah,
grave robbery was like a huge lucrative thing at that time because after World War I, the economy of Germany just completely collapsed. It's insane. Like, the inflation was so high that people would need to use an entire wheelbarrow full of money to buy like a loaf of bread or basic supplies. They would pay workers at their lunch break because if they paid them in the evening, the inflation would have gone up so high that they wouldn't be able to buy anything.
Wow.
Just in those few hours. Yeah, it was a crazy time, and there was not a lot of police, and it allowed a lot of serial killers like Harmon and Curtin here to and a whole huge crime organization to flourish. You had to buy things on the black market. That was where you got your things. You couldn't go to the store and buy things. Fritz Hamann was chopping up his victims and selling the meat on the black market, giving it to cops as presents.
Yeah.
Because the cops liked them, because you couldn't buy meat on the black market. I mean, on the normal market, you had to go on the black market to buy it. And that's why it's interesting, the film they made about Peter Curtin, M, by Fritz Lang. Incredible film, German Expressionism, old black and white movie, starring Peter Lorre, you know. In that film, he's caught by the underground because the cops are going and busting illegal gambling dens, prostitution rings, thief, like black market, fencing operations, mm-hmm. in an effort to like get him up out of the underground, and it works, and all the gangsters get together and like, this shit's fucking up our business. We got to find out who's doing these murders so that we can keep going on with our business because the cops are fucking with us.
Well, Marcel Petio, I mean, back during World War II, he was dumping his victims into the river. But they're all getting found. So that's why he had to, that's why he switched to the oven, and things obviously ended badly for him. But yeah, but there was a whole, you know, like underground network and everything with that case as well. If you're on the losing side of a war, your economy is going to be fucked for a while.
Well, yeah, France really fucked Germany after the end of World War One. I mean, like, we probably wouldn't have had World War II. Hitler never would have come to power if they hadn't and just so cruel to them, you know, like it was fucked up. And a lot of it was from the influenza flu, because the president of the United States at the time had come there to do the to negotiate the peace treaty, the Treaty of Versailles, and he got the Spanish flu and was so sick, and he was like really trying to be, like, get France to chill out on like the reparations towards Germany, and he ended up getting so deathly sick that the negotiations pretty much went on without him, or he was just like just sitting there so sick he couldn't do much. Little interesting historical tidbit.
Yeah. But yeah, war.
Fritz Haarman was smart. He would bury some of his victims in graveyards. It was pretty interesting. Go to fresh dug graves and then like dig them up a little bit and toss the victim in there.
It Todd totally, I think he blew the lid off of the Larry Hall case. All of the victims, it happened in like Indiana. All of the victims that he had that haven't been found. And he owned a graveyard. They're buried in his graveyard. Todd said that, and I can't believe nobody has said that though. Why hasn't his graveyard been, you know, searched? You know? But whatever.
There's a lot of legal issues. You're digging up graves.
Well, true. But I mean, he probably just would, you know, put, you know, just like dig a grave back open, dump the body on top of it, you know, on top of the casket, and fill it back in.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's actually our most listened to episode by far. For some reason, why that one? I don't know. It's not a bad episode, but we have better. So, but anyway, hashtag. But I digress. In August of 1929, Peter encountered Maria Hahn, who was looking for a husband, and Peter charmed her. You know, slightly different MO here, and he took her on a date the following Sunday. She liked Peter. And he suggested they go somewhere more private. And she agreed, saying that she wasn't worried about this murderer who was stalking the street because she had Peter with her.
Well, it makes sense in a way if you think about it.
Oh, a brutal irony. But they found a nice quiet place. And Peter shoved Maria into the grass and hiked up her skirt to rape her. And she was about to scream, but, you know, she stopped She was about to scream, but stopped when she saw the scissors. She's like,
she liked that, huh?
She's like, damn it, all the men in Dusseldorf that aren't the killer, and I wind up with the killer. Fuck!
Life can be cruel sometimes.
Indeed. But she allowed him to rape her, not realizing that Peter intended to kill her. And he took his time. And he got bored after a while. He stabbed her repeatedly in rhythm with his thrusts. And I can think of a couple other people who did that as well. Carl Panzram did it. I think Angus Sinclair did that to one of the victims in the camper van. I think he did. And this is where he escalates to the V word in his moniker. He pressed his lips to her wounds and he lapped up the blood, and he drank so much of her blood that he puked the next day.
That's a lot of blood there.
Yeah.
All the blood.
All of it. That ejaculation inside of her was the holy grail of the ejaculations that he had been searching for. He dug a shallow grave and he buried her, but that wasn't enough. He wanted the world to bear witness of the masterpiece of Peter Curtin, the Vampire of Dusseldorf. A couple nights later, Peter went back and dug Maria up, and he dragged her corpse to a tree, and using a hammer and nails that he had brought with him, he tried to nail her up to a tree, crucifixion style, and that would horrify all the Catholics in town.
I mean, everyone's Christian.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it would just horrify the Catholics.
Yeah.
But they're more Catholics.
The Lutherans, right?
The Lutherans, the Methodists.
The Germans.
The Branch Davidians. Before the body was up, though, it cracked open, spewing fluids all over him. Ugh. And he fell,
Hate
and
that.
Maria's corpse fell on top of him. And he laughed, but her body pressed up against his, you know.
Oh, I think I just had one again.
Leaking all of the but he had another idea. He raped the decaying body and then reburied her.
I've got a great idea. Why don't I rape this rotting corpse? Yeah.
Yeah, he would come back several times.
I am a genius. That is the smartest thing I've thought of all year.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't get these people that
necrophiliacs.
Yeah.
Do you ever hear that a lot of necrophiliacs have a bad sense of smell? This is like a thing that a study I saw, and it makes a lot of sense.
It does.
But it's also very disturbing how many people would be necrophiliacs if they only had a bad sense of smell.
Ew.
But, yeah, it's utterly bizarre, this, sexual. Ted Bundy would ask his girlfriend to just lay there and stuff. And who was it? There was somebody else who would actually put white makeup on their girlfriend and ask them to just lay there as they fantasize.
God, I've heard that story. I can't think of escaping me.
It
at
is.
The moment.
It's one of the most bizarre, you know, and disturbing and gruesome aspects of these guys.
But that's normal if you're into black metal.
Fucking a corpse? Black metal. I don't fuck corpses.
No. Putting white makeup on to make yourself look like a corpse.
Oh, your corpse paint. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I love putting on corpse paint. It's fun. I did it like 10 times in October. October's the only month you can do it when no one stares at you. I love October.
After Maria's murder, Peter decided to switch from the scissors to a knife because people were connecting the scissor murders.
It's like, sad that he had to lose his
there's
something about the scissor murder, you know.
Put the scissors in that because
ring, ring, ring.
Early August 21st, he hit the streets again, attacking people at random. He stabbed an 18-year-old.
This is berserker mode.
Yeah,
right,
this is total berserker mode. He stabbed an 18-year-old girl repeatedly, and then a 30-year-old man, and then a 37-year-old woman, and none of them died, thankfully. But all of these attacks happened the same morning before the sun came up, like in just a couple hours.
He's in a full on just going out, just stabbing people. It's nuts. Mm-hmm. Stab him and run away too. It's fucking crazy. Terrifying.
Yeah. If he had just been a better soldier, you know, he could have fought in World War I, killed all the people he wanted.
I mean, it's hard for a narcissistic psychopath to take orders and everything like that.
True. And he was a shitty soldier. But in the interviews, none of the victims could give a detailed description other than the general description, like his height, build, hair color, and the fact that he was white. So.
A white dude in 1925 Germany?
Imagine that.
He didn't stand out like a sore thumb there?
Yeah. Kind of like a black pimp in Salt Lake City in the 70s? Joseph Paul Franklin episode. Worth a listen.
Glad you clarified.
but while Peter had changed the weapon, he hadn't changed his thrust angle, so police knew that they were dealing with the same person. And yeah, 3 days later, Peter was hunting again. He hadn't been satisfied by attacking three people who survived because he seeks the Grail. And he's
the Holy Grail. Yeah.
There was a carnival in town. And he figured he'd be able to find girls there. And he came across two girls, 14-year-old Louise Lindzen and her 5-year-old foster sister, Gertrude Hamacher. He started chatting with them, and he pulled out his wallet. He asked Louise if she would run to the store and get him a pack of cigarettes, and he'd give her some money when she got back. She agreed. It's more money for the carnival. Yay!
Why don't you go buy me a pack of cigarettes?
Yeah.
Well, I look after the little girl.
Hey, well, look after
you the like little scissors, girl. Little girl. That's fucking fucked up shit, man.
So off she went, leaving 5-year-old Gertrude with a literal bloodthirsty demon. And Peter didn't waste any time. He grabbed Gertrude, wrapped her hands around her throat, and to keep her, you know, to keep her quiet. And once he had choked her out, he slashed Gertrude's throat. And, you know, she wasn't the main target of his lust, but he still had to do away with her. So he tossed Gertrude in some bushes and waited for Louise to get back. But when she returned, God, just threw away like fucking garbage.
Terrible. So sad.
Yeah. I mean, just.
I mean, he's a psychopath. He's got no feelings for anything or anybody except his own bloodlust, literal bloodlust.
I don't get it, and I'm glad I don't.
No, but that's what's fascinating about it is trying to, you know, I mean, it's like a fucking literal monster. You know, people love horror and being scared, and it's like there's nothing scarier than thinking that there's people like this out there right now, this second.
Oh, I know.
Right next to you, right behind you is a serial killer.
And they also say that at any given time there's in the United States, there's probably at least 20 serial killers active. We're not going to run out of subjects to cover anytime soon.
Well, luckily they're catching them real fast these days.
Yeah, they are. And they are. It's unlikely that we'll have another Gacy or Bundy. It's unlikely, but it's possible.
I mean, what was that guy's name? Brian Kerfinger, the guy in Idaho?
Yeah, that guy. But he was a spree killer, though. He just killed. But are they connected?
He got caught.
Yeah, I know he did.
But he was definitely like on. He would have been a serial killer if he hadn't gotten caught.
True. Yeah, that's a case I'm going to cover, but I'm going to wait until he's in prison when the story is over before we cover it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because a lot of podcasts are coming out and they're doing it now up to the information that's available. I'm going to wait. So anyway, Louise returned and she was confused because Peter was there, but Gertrude wasn't. And Peter didn't waste any time. He grabbed Louise by the throat and started to choke her out. And he released his grip a little bit, allowing some air to pass. And all he was doing was supporting her so that he could pull out his knife. He slashed her in the neck, and then he got close enough to smell the blood coming out, and that wasn't enough. He drank her blood, and that gave him the orgasm that he wanted, the grail.
Oh, it feels so good with the blood.
Yeah, the blood. You don't understand me. I'm just a painter, and I like to. They said paint the town red. That's all I was trying to do.
Oh, Lordy.
That was tasteless. Oh, God. I'll cut that out.
That was like watered down blood. Yeah, it was tasteless.
I'll leave it in. Fuck it. But Louise was still alive, but Peter, yeah, I can leave it in there because I'm making fun of Peter.
Oh. I'm not. He's a national hero in Germany. I think that we should all applaud him. A child-killing rapist who loved orgasms when he drank blood. Wonderful person. Not. Nine.
Nine.
Mein Kampf, Barpig Nugent.
Also, if you listen to the Joseph Paul Franklin episode, that is where that whole thing originated from. But, oh, God. Louise was still alive, but Peter began stabbing her repeatedly and hit her aorta, knowing that she would bleed out. He tossed her in some bushes and walked away. Louise made it several steps before she collapsed dead.
Mm. And
when the news broke out about these two murders,
you think the carnival music was going on? They could hear it from where they were.
You mean your podcast theme music?
Yeah. It's always creepy, right? With the lights going up and casting long shadows about.
I'm sorry. You totally set yourself up for that one. No, I like your podcast. It's one that I listen to every week. And by the way, part two of Sid and Nancy, excellent.
Oh, thank you so much. Put a lot of work into it.
Yeah, I know. I mean,
it's exhaustive.
You make my episode on Sid and Nancy seem, you know.
I'm a big Sex Pistols fan, though. Well, so that helped.
I mean, there were things in my episode that I covered that you didn't.
Like, so what?
I don't remember. But
I'd be interested to hear.
Well, listen to the episode. But I mean, there were some things. It was more Sex Pistols related than it was Sid and Nancy. But yeah, there were some things. I'm like, oh, they didn't cover this. I don't remember what it was, though. But no, but you guys did a hell of a job on that.
I mean, I did from both of their births until their deaths.
Yeah.
And afterwards. I read her mom's book. I read so many books about him. Yeah.
Yeah, and when you were reading that bit about when he was talking to Nancy's mom and everything. Yeah, I kind of got a little, you know, somebody was cutting onions in my truck when you were reading that. You know, I kind of had a similar reaction to what you said you did.
What's you know, that?
Tearing up a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, it was deep. I mean, this guy.
It was, dude. And to her mom. Her mom is such a fucking bitch.
Right.
And he's like, no one understands you but me. You're my only friend. I loved her so much.
And she hates
him. I never understood what it was. Yes, she hates him. And he's like, you're the only one who understands how deep our love was and how much I loved her and how much she meant to me. And now I know that someone can die from a heartache and I can't be here without her. And you're like, God damn, dude.
It's like crazy. I was just like, yeah, cause I did not.
And well written.
It really was. I mean, he was a wordsmith. I mean, his first one about like the 12 things I like about Nancy. Not so much.
Yeah, not so much.
But I think I covered that one in my episode, but not the other ones.
Yeah, but people don't, you know, talk about, you don't really hear about that much. You know what I mean? I watch a lot of documentaries and they don't talk about these like the incredible love poems that he wrote to her or wrote to her mom.
Yeah. I'd like to see a movie made about the actual story.
Yeah, Sid and Nancy's a fun movie, but it's definitely not based in reality at all.
Right. I'd like to see.
Well, there's a great film, a great series called Pistols. Have you seen that?
No.
By Danny Boyle. It's amazing, man. It's really about, you know, Steve, the guitarist, and he was in love with Chrissy Hynde, which is something I didn't realize. And, you know, from The Pretenders.
Yeah. I cover her for one thing in our episode, like how the early days of The Pretenders and Susie and the Banshees and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, so she worked at Malcolm's shop and they were like in love, and it's like this kind of unrequited love story, but it's the formation of the Sex Pistols and everything, and it's brilliantly done, and it's amazing.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out.
Pistols, yeah.
Yeah.
Television show.
Anyway, a little bit of promotional digression there. Definitely.
Yeah, if you like punk rock, check out our show. We got a lot of punk rock episodes.
Yeah, Bang. That was great. So Murder Coaster has a two-part on Sid and Nancy. We have a one-part. They're both good. They're both good episodes. His two-part better than my one-part. I'll admit it. But anyway. So when the news... Blah, when the There we go. I made it a while into this episode before I got completely tongue-tied. I was kind of impressed. But all good
You
things
got in
must
that vaporizer there.
But when the news broke about these two murders, this is when the Vampiro Dusseldorf name was given to him, and this news actually went worldwide, and Peter absolutely loved it. Yeah.
Yay, I'm so happy.
Yeah, giddy with excitement, he went home, and on his way home, he propositioned a maid on who was on the street, you know, Gertrude Schult. There's lots of Gertrudes in this story. But she said that she'd rather die than sleep with him. And Peter said, well, die then. And he pulled out his knife and stabbed her in the chest. Peter just strolled away thinking she was dead, but she wasn't. She was rushed to the hospital, but as usual, she wasn't able to give a good description.
He's this like plain looking guy. It's funny. A lot of the pictures don't look, if you look at all these photographs of him, a lot of times they don't all look like the same person. Right. Ted Bundy's like that too. You're like, fucking chameleon.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of them are like that. So Peter's laying low at this point. He's watching the media and the police, but to his horror, the newspaper slowly stopped talking about it. It's like, can't have that. I'm the vampire, yo. The vampire. The vampire.
The vampire of Dusseldorf.
The vampire, yo. So, what do you think he does? Take a guess.
He settles down, has a couple kids, buys a farm, dairy farm, starts an ice cream business called The Vampire of Dusseldorf Ice Cream. Yeah, and becomes a successful businessman, lives the last of his days with his grandchildren in happiness, watching the sunsets and thinking what a wonderful life he had.
Yep. We'll see you next week. So he began writing letters to the police. And he discussed the murder of Maria Hahn, gave all the details, including a hand-drawn map to the location of the grave. But Maria's remains couldn't tell them anything they didn't already know as far as clues were concerned. So Peter tried two more murders in September, choking a woman out and trying to rape her, but he was driven off by people who caught him. And it's a shame they didn't catch him or chase him, because it could have been a Richard Ramirez-esque lynching. The other he tried to stab, but she got away. And that capture scene of Richard Ramirez is one of the most satisfying ends to these stories that there is. I mean, it really is.
Yeah, it's a fun one. El Matador.
Yeah.
That's what they were all screaming at.
They're all like chasing. It's like a scene out of a freaking movie. I mean, it really is.
Yeah, he like runs across the highway. It's like an 8-lane highway in Los Angeles. He runs across it and then.
And he didn't get splattered.
Yeah.
And then they're all chasing him through the neighborhood, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like I can picture like him running, like a shot of him like running towards the camera, uh-huh. with like a mob of people probably about 20 or 30 feet behind him.
Yeah, and then he tried to steal a car too at one point.
Yeah, and then he got that his ass kicked. Down. He got his ass kicked by the woman's husband. That scene, that whole capture of Richard Ramirez is just, it's great. I love it. It's gold.
He picked the wrong day to come back to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
To the barrio.
Yeah, that's our episode 15, I think it was. We covered him. So by the end of September, nobody was talking about him. You know, don't you know who I am? I'm the vampire, buddy. Freaking German Pauly Shore. You're afraid of me just because I haven't killed recently doesn't mean I'm a has-been, bro. I'm still out there. I'm scary, buddy.
Don't cause a comeback, yeah.
And you're like, what have you done for me lately? Short attention spans for sure. I'm the vampire, buddy. I just made Peter Curtin into Pauly Shore.
That is quite the feat, I'll tell you what.
Huh?
That is quite the feat.
Well, you are talking to the guy who made Warren Jeffs funny. But he was more afraid of getting caught than being an evil villain, though, so he continued to lay low. But that wouldn't last long, and he decided to change his MO to make everybody think that there were two maniacs on the streets of Dusseldorf at the time. So he hit the streets again, this time with a hammer.
Hammer time. Hammers are terrifying to me, man. Like, the people that use hammers, it's just such an insanely brutal, vicious thing. A lot of times they'll use the claw part. Oh,
yeah.
Gives me the willies to think about, man. It's just utter fucking, like, there's something like sleek and smooth about a knife, something almost just not
artistic.
And also, like, I don't know how this, it just doesn't do such utter brutal fucking damage. It's, I mean, it does into you, you know what I mean? Like, to your interior organs, but just hammers are fucking scary and brutal.
Yeah, I mean.
And it is crazy that he tries to reinvent himself as a whole nother serial killer, and does.
Yeah, he does. Like,
completely. They don't even tie the crimes together. They think it is a different killer, and it's,
well,
insane, man.
To begin with.
Oh yeah, one of the things about Germany post World War One, while they were going through this awful economic crisis, it did lead to like this huge like underground prolific music and art and artists, and that's where we get the cabaret. Like, the when you hear about cabarets, they were formed at that time, and there was also like a huge renaissance of gay culture, which the Nazis soon wiped out, unfortunately. But
yeah,
that's what we see a lot of times in moments of history when there's economic instability. The artists, for some reason, are able to thrive and come together and create this amazing music and this crazy, amazing scene. I heard that Peter Curtin himself actually wrote some music.
Well, it's interesting you say that. So Ida Reuter, a young woman who had just arrived in Dusseldorf looking for work, and just who happened to be at the train station when she got off? The Hammerman of Dusseldorf. So he chatted her up and he convinced her to go and have lunch with him, and then he showed her around Dusseldorf and she happily agreed. So they started walking and Peter's running his charm game and everything is showing her the sights. He even told her about building rafts and cruising down the Rhine River as a kid. And you know, she was eating it up and everything. She had hit the jet that blah, she boop. She had hit the jackpot.
Tell me more. Is it just like Mark Twain's Huckleberry Finn?
Tell me more. Tell me more. Did you get that very far? I hate that movie. But
you don't like Grease?
I hate that movie.
Fuck you. I'm out of here.
I have my
you
reasons.
You not like Grease?
I have my reasons. I dated a woman, you know, what, years and years and years ago that I lived with. She was the mother of my first kid, and I made the mistake of buying her that movie for her birthday, and what do you think we watched every day for the next like 3 months?
The greatest musical ever made with John Travolta,
I guess. But so she steps off the train, finds a handsome, charming young man. But like you were saying, it's funny that you bring that up. As they were walking down, there was a band, you know, there was a band playing, and they were like inviting people up to sing and everything. And Peter was actually a, you know, pretty good singer and everything. And, he got up there and improv with the, you know, with this band and everything. And we just happened to have audio of that survived through World War II and everything. So we're going to go ahead and play that now. And go.
I got my first real river raft. made it with some friends of mine. A night fun school project. It was fun, I was only 9. Me and some friends from school sailed it down the river Rhine. Kidney fell when I rocked the raft. Johnny drowned, I reached the line. Oh, when I look back now, that was the start of my killing spree. And if I had a choice, yeah, I would have killed my dad too. Those were the best days of my life.
That's very interesting. His accent is nowhere near as thick in German as I thought it would be singing in English like that.
Well, it's kind of like when the British singers and everything, they talk with a British accent and everything, and but when they sing, it's just like, you know, she's my baby. And then you get people like Green Day Americans who are just like, you know, all right, everybody, this next song's called She's My Baby. She's my baby. But,
yeah. Wow. Peter Curtin wanted to be an American singer. Or Canadian, maybe.
Canadian, eh? But, yeah, and it's weird, though. I think that Bryan Adams may have found this and used the music.
Who's Bryan Adams?
The Canadian singer.
Never heard of him.
They turned into a corner in an abandoned street where he pulled out his hammer and without hesitation, he hit her in the head. Where?
In the temple, yeah.
In the temple. He had knocked her out. And when she came to, Peter was raping her and she asked for mercy, but Peter just sped up. She drew a deep breath to cry for help, and he just started beating her with the hammer in rhythm with the thrusts.
Man, that's fucking brutal, dude. Ugh.
This is why sex and violence.
It's such a
this is why you need freaking beer when you're covering these. So the hammer was a lot more brutal, and once again he found the Holy Grail. And once again, people were talking about him, the Hammer Man. I'm the Hammer Man.
I'm the Hammer Man, yeah.
Thank you.
Ugh, man.
Buddy. All in all, he was very smart. He had learned how to isolate the victims and not get caught by confusing the police. On October 25th, he set out again, randomly attacking 2 women on the streets. And neither attack was fatal, and heaven forbid if Peter didn't get off. But when he attacked the second woman, the head of the hammer snapped off.
Hate that.
And he just stood there. He was just like, what?
Nine! I mean, the handle was pretty brutal, though.
How am I supposed to be the hammer man if the hammer man if the hammer breaks? Dang, perfect Nugan.
Well, he really liked that hammer. I think he went back and looked for the head later.
Did he?
Yeah.
That's hilarious. But he just stood there.
It's not as heartbreaking as fucking the Donner Party when he was chopping the firewood and the axe head flew off into the snow. They couldn't find it. That spelled their doom.
Well, that's that. An axe in that deep of snow, you'd think it would be easy to find where it went. Just look for the hole.
Yeah,
from where it fell into the snow, it might just cave in on itself.
And it's, if it's already snowing, it's. I lived in Lake Tahoe for years. It's fucking snows, man.
I've driven down Donner's Pass a few times.
Yeah, my best friend lives in Donner.
So, really. It's not as bad as people make it out to be. It's like when you're a rookie truck driver, Donner's Pass, man, Donner's. It's not as bad as people make it out to be. I've driven
through it in June, and that you fucking had to put chains on. It was fucking like June, and it's fucking dumping snow. I mean, I don't know when you were there, but I mean, it fucking, did you see the pictures of it this year? Like, it was insane.
Well, yeah,
this
you're right. It's,
I mean, this was one of the harshest winters it's ever. They had the most snowfall. It broke the records this year. And like the photographs were just nuts. It looked like
I've never driven it with the, you know, with it iced up like that. I've never had to put chains on. But
you have to put chains on all the time. But sometimes there's a drought. You know what I mean? Like there's certain years it doesn't snow and there's droughts.
Yeah.
But it's pretty brutal up there.
Yeah, I've never driven through it with the snow. So I guess that's where the horror stories come from, because I've driven, hell, the cabbages in Oregon it's not as long as Donner's Pass, but the curves and everything is a lot more, you know, a lot tighter.
No, it's a big, huge, nice highway. It's easy to get over if it's not fucking insane dumping snow, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. But
the 80, it's a nice road.
But, so he just stood there and just like, huh? My hammer broke. Stupid hammer.
Comedic moment.
But the hammer man is a fraud. I gotta go back to being the vampire, buddy. the hampire.
There you go.
The hampire. There's a billism.
The hampire strikes back.
some friggin' B-list, you know, like B-movie, B-horror movie is going to hear this episode and be like, the Hampire. There we go. That's a movie.
Yeah.
So the vampire is back.
You come to an unfortunate end, because that hammer handle could definitely be carved into a steak.
Indeed. So the vampire is back. Back to my scissors again, buddy.
The only thing worse than running with scissors is scissoring with runs.
I gotta take a piss. You got me. I'll be right back.
I made him piss himself.
Well, the vampire is back, you know. Back with the scissors. Too bad he never encountered somebody who had a rock. So Peter the vampire went into the poor districts looking for a victim, and he found one. 5-year-old girl, take a guess as to her name.
Gertrude.
Yep, Gertrude. Gertrude Alberman. And she was playing by herself, but it wandered.
That's the most German name I've fucking ever heard. Gertrude Alberman.
Yeah, too bad he didn't, you know, too bad the timelines didn't match up, and maybe he could have met a young Gertrude Banachesky. That would have done the world a favor. But she was playing by herself, but he wandered off too far and gotten lost. So as luck would have it, she met a nice man who would help her find her way back home. Yay.
I don't like the way this is going.
Don't either. So they came to an abandoned building, which Peter said, oh, your house is just on the other side of this building. It's a shortcut. It's not a shortcut. It's never a shortcut.
I mean, I don't know. I always tell my kids, if you meet a stranger and they're going to take you on a shortcut, you should go with them, especially if they have candy, you know, and there could be a puppy there, rainbows, unicorns, you don't know.
Oh my God.
Always take the shortcut with the stranger into the dark forest of Germany.
Oh God. the views expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect the opinion. Never mind.
Children listening to this show, always take the shortcut with a stranger you don't know. Rule number one. I mean, you don't know. They could have all kinds of goodies. Jelly beans.
Balloons.
Scissors.
Oh, especially if it's if he's got scissors. I mean, apparently
that means he's going to cut you some paper dolls.
Right.
It's going to be delightful.
Yeah. So, I mean, man carries his own scissors with him. I mean,
yeah.
He's like a guitar player that goes to concerts with his guitar in the back in case the guitar player cancels so he can get up there and play.
You never know. It could happen.
Yeah, it could happen.
Yeah, she does need a rock, you know, because what do all the cops say in Germany? It's like a stereotypical thing, right? Papers. Give us your papers.
Yeah.
You know? He's like, scissors. Archer just has been like, rock.
I'll give you my scissors. So, the girl started to cry. Peter just picked her up by the throat and carried her inside. And her fear turned Peter on. And holding her in the air with one hand, he grabbed his scissors from the, you know, with the other hand and drove them into her head. Drove the scissors into her head. Where? Where on her head?
In the field. Where in her head?
Mm-hmm.
In the temple, yeah.
The temple.
The body is a temple.
Apparently it's a good place to put scissors.
Well, yeah, I kind of find that fascinating because, like, whenever I watch zombie movies, they're always, like, stabbing people in the head, stabbing zombies in the head. And I'm always like, dude, that is bullshit. You can't just take, like, a knife and stab someone in, like, the forehead or the top of the head.
Right, that's not going to happen.
The skull is very huge, but I guess the temple's got that area there. But
that soft spot right there, you know, right there.
Yeah, what's, like, the where the eye socket comes out, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can.
That's part of your eye. That bone right there is like your eye socket bone, and then mm-hmm. behind that is that little sweet spot. Ugh, God, give me that fucking willies.
But he dropped her, and then he climbed on top of her and began stabbing her repeatedly. Her body was a complete mess from all the stabbing, and he was satisfied. And he scooped her up and he tossed her into some bushes and took off. Fucking sick fuck.
Yeah.
But in all seriousness, there's never a shortcut, it's never a mannequin, and never get into a camper van.
Don't listen to him. You never know what's in the camper van. I mean, that's a good time right there. They could be going to see the Grateful Dead or something.
Oh, I screwed that up. I should have said, and never get into a camper van. Angus and Claire episode. But this murder went undetected for a while, and the people were still in shock over the Hammer Man. Through March, he attacked 10 people, but they all survived. But there literally was a new sheriff in town, Ernst Gnat. Ernst. E-R-N-S-T. Ernst.
That is a very German name.
Indeed. But he was the chief inspector of the Berlin police, and he was asked to help. And when he agreed, he took over the whole operation. And he personally did interviews with every witness and every surviving victim. And he was able to put together a profile of Peter, as well as a rough composite.
It's pronounced composite.
Thank you.
Composite. Composite.
Composite. Sketch of him. Yeah, this is literally the precursor to John Douglas. So Gnat concluded that these murders and attacks were sexually motivated, and he believed that the acts of violence had replaced acts of rape for gratification. Spot on.
He is a genius. I mean, if I saw a body that was sexually mutilated and covered in semen, I'd be like, car what? Accident?
COVID?
COVID.
Oh man. But as far as the he's spot on, but it's like that's kind of an easy one.
He's a good detective. Yeah, without him it wouldn't Who knows what would happen? And right. there weren't many cops around at the time, which is there was a shortage in the police.
That's because all the people that had been police might have been, you know, soldiers in the war and got killed.
Yes. Yeah. And they also didn't have any money to hire police. It was a crazy time.
And I don't care how much you love your city, you're not being a cop for free.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and then a lot of times they would let criminals get away with stuff if they would rat out other criminals and stuff. And it became this weird thing.
You dirty rat. Snitches get stitches. Snitches get scissors.
Snitches get scissors. That's right.
So, this type of investigation, you know, profiling and everything was new, but it had elements of Freudian theory in it. So, Gannett was careful of who he told about this, because also at that time, you know, it's just like, oh, you know, Freud is all about sex with their mother, you know, and all that stuff.
Yeah, the Oedipus complex.
Yeah, and
there's other things as well.
Well, yeah, there is, but still, Sigmund Freud was kind of mocked because of his obsession with sex with his mother, and a lot of people thought that his theories had, you know, were basically his way of rationalizing his own attraction to his own mother.
Well, he famously said, "Sometimes a cigar is just a cigar."
And George Carlin said, "Sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. Other times, it's just a big brown dick."
I mean, yeah, most psychologists don't take Freudian stuff too seriously these days.
Right.
But, I mean, it's still very interesting, and there are still elements of truth to it.
Right, but a lot of it is just way off, you know, with the whole sex with your mother thing and all that stuff. But
I always liked his thoughts on the uncanny valley, this spookiness like that.
Yeah, but Peter did admit to fantasizing about raping his mother. Just saying.
Well, he watched his own father rape his mother, so
right.
Yeah, how could you not? It's not like I had a dream. Like, it's like you've literally watched your mother be raped by your father right in front of you. It's like,
and then
stuck in your head.
He recreated it with his own sister too.
Yeah.
So it's not out of the realm of possibility that he would also fantasize about raping his mother.
So maybe that's what he was thinking of when he was fucking those sheep.
Yeah. Ew. Around this time, the body of Gertrude Alberman was found, and of course, it had the temple strike. They went through everything, every piece of evidence, every letter. They were 100% sure that all of these murders done by scissor, knife, or hammer had been done by the same person. But
Freudian slip. Did you hear yourself? Did you hear what you said?
What did I say?
All these mothers instead of murders. You said mother instead of murder. Freud would have a field day with you.
Oh, boy. I meant to say all these motherfucking murders. There we go.
Motherfucker. The interesting term that you just used there.
Are you Freuding me?
Sometimes a motherfucker is just a motherfucker.
I got nothing. So technically any man who has sex with a woman who's had a kid is a motherfucker.
I maybe you want to take this one out, but I don't even know why I should say this one.
I'll do it. I'll take it out if it's that bad.
Well, have you ever smelled your mother's pussy? What about when you were born?
I'll leave that in.
Please don't judge me on that, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sorry I stooped so low with such a disgusting and vulgar joke, but he fucking got me going, man. I'm a 70s kid. This is what we did for fun.
Oh, it was a great day when we discovered 8008 is boop on a calculator.
Oh, yeah. I showed that to my kids.
Well, anyway.
You got a calculator for school? Look at this.
You know, I'm surprised that you know how they're doing like all these like dark versions of like children's stories and everything, like Winnie the Pooh, the serial killer.
I don't want to see that. Is it any good?
It is good. For a slasher movie, it's good.
Sweet.
But it's bad, but bad in a good way.
Nice. Well, I like bad horror movies. I like the Terrifier. You know, that's some of the worst movies ever made. And
yeah, the Terrifier.
Still fun.
I don't know if I'm going to watch Terrifier 3 or not. I haven't decided yet.
Oh, I'm definitely going to. I thought the second was a masterpiece of a terrible movie.
Well, I did too until the after credit scene.
Oh, I don't even know if I saw the after credit scene.
There is an after credit scene on that. But,
I mean, I don't know. This story doesn't matter to me at all. I have no interest even seeing the after. It was stupid as hell.
Yeah.
I didn't take it very seriously. I was just like, oh, look, there's a creepy looking little ghost girl. Oh, look at all the blood. Look at all the guts. That's fucking cool.
And the final girl was fucking hot.
Yeah, she's pretty.
but no, that there is a post credit scene, and that ruined the entire movie for me.
I don't think anything could have ruined it at that point. For me personally.
You'll have to watch it and let me know what you think. But yeah, there is definitely a post credit scene in that one. I had this thought earlier when you were talking about Spire and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like, but they're making all these movies about, you know, like dark movies of like children's tales, like Winnie the Pooh or whatever. And there's others too. But why hasn't somebody made a movie about Beavis growing up to be a serial killer?
Because the reason they made a Winnie the Pooh movie is because they did it the second that it went into the public domain, so that anybody could, you can make a Winnie the Pooh thing. You can fucking draw Winnie the Pooh. You can make a Winnie the Pooh book. You can put it out right now. It's the copyrights. There's no copyright.
Oh,
it's
open. Okay.
So it's like they had it like timed out like to the second, like the
Beavis,
second Winnie the Pooh hit, he's very copyrighted. You can't use, they'll come down on you hard if you try to use that image.
Well, Mike Judge could approve it. I mean, Beavis has Beavis has the makings of a serial killer.
Yeah. They're the new show. People love it. I haven't seen it. Have you?
The new Beavis and Butthead episodes?
Yeah. Brand new Beavis and Butthead.
Yeah. They're exactly the same as we remember the ones from the 90s. There's nothing different about them. But I mean, it's so.
People like it. I don't know.
Yeah. I do. I enjoyed it. But
nice.
You know, but I mean, it was kind of like a, you know, like a guilty pleasure throwback to my past.
Right. Nostalgia.
And everything. But still, yeah, nostalgia. That's the word I was meant. But Beavis has the makings of a serial. He all three of the McDonald's triad. He has all three of them.
The McDonald's triad has been discredited as well, though, but.
But it's still something to look at. There's still something to raise an eyebrow at. Beavis wets the bed. Beavis
is obsessed with fire.
Is obsessed with fire, and he is not friendly to animals.
He fantasizes about having sex with his mother as well.
He probably does. he just wants to have sex. in these new ones, there's a lot of episodes with Beavis and Butthead as adults. And they're still virgins.
Aw, that's sad. At this point, you think they would have fucked each other.
Maybe they did. But still, Beavis has all the makings of a serial killer. Anyway, hashtag, but I digress. So they went through everything, every letter. They were 100% sure that I already said all that. But they had no idea who the killer was. The killer needed to make a mistake. And
it's like these FBI profilers, you know what I mean? And they like come to a small town and they're like, he's between 30 and 45 years old. He's white male, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, well, yeah, okay, great. Thanks. That does not fucking help me catch the motherfucker. You know what I mean?
Right. But I want to have John Douglas on and interview him, but I don't want to talk about all the things that he's done right, which is basically all the interviews that he does. I want to talk about the ones that he got wrong.
Yeah. Fuck him.
No, and I think he'd be, I think
fuck
he'd
the
be
feds, down. Man. You hear that FBI? Fuck you, dude. Come and get me.
I think that he,
you know those things on your mattress that says do not cut under penalty of law? I fucking cut them off. That's right, dude. FBI. What the fuck are you going to do about it?
Oh my God. I think we got to wrap this podcast up. I can't be affiliated with, a mattress
outlaw. Mattress outlaw.
A mattress outlaw. So anyway, but I really would like to interview John Douglas about what he got wrong. But yeah, and I think he'd be
I'm
down
sure
for
love
it.
That.
Yeah, seriously, he would. No, I'm not even joking. I think he would like that. But on May 14th,
don't interview me about what I got wrong because I don't want to fucking hear about it. All right.
Well, you're not a criminal profiler who had a Netflix show made about you either.
Semi-fictional.
Semi-fictional. Didn't even use the real names, but
right.
It was still a really good show, Mindhunter.
Oh, it was so good. It really was. I loved it.
And I
the
want
the actors they got playing those characters.
Oh, I know. I really want them to like somebody to pick it up because the
I know.
The,
why don't they make more? It's,
the whole thing
where
they were gearing up with BTK. I mean,
yeah.
It's just, that was just like chills, man. It's like you're seeing him stalk the Oteros and all that stuff. And it's just like, whoa, man. So
right? It's hugely popular. I don't understand.
Yeah, but I'm sure somebody will pick it up. But and honestly, I'd even be okay with, you know, if they got different actors to play them as long as it's the same character, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Spartacus. They got a completely different actor to play him after the original actor died, and nobody cared. You know? So, anyway. So, on May 14th, 1930, Maria Budlick arrived in Dusseldorf looking for work, and of course, the first person that she met when she got off the train was a man who, of course, agreed to help her find where she was headed. A boarding house. And she knew of the vampire of Dusseldorf, so when the man tried to lead her into a park, a dark park, she froze. He told her it was a shortcut. And she'd know that if she wasn't some ignorant girl from the country.
Yeah, you ignorant girl from the country. You
ignorant girl from the country. Perfect.
The city people know that the shortcut always leads to the jelly beans.
The jelly beans.
I've got some jelly beans in the dark forest for you. Come this way.
He continued to bitch her out, and a bystander showed up on the scene and was like, this man bothering you? Man giving you a problem? And she said yes, and then the man hightailed it away. And she was grateful, and the Good Samaritan asked her where she was headed. But and he's like, I'll take you there. But
and that bystander
out,
and her
but,
went on to marry, have a happy relationship, have many children. And now their grandchildren sit and talk about that day and how their parents met. Just a happy, happy story. And that's it, ladies and gentlemen. We'll catch you next week.
Yep. Thanks a lot. Thanks for listening. God, I love when you do that stuff. That's the author in you. That's perfect. I love it.
I have a way with words, yeah.
Indeed. So, the good Samaritan asked where she was headed, and she told him, and the man said he'd take her there. But the other man was right. It was the shortcut through the dark park.
You silly girl.
Yeah, and she's probably like, oh, thank God. You may have just saved me from the vampire of Dusseldorf.
What a crazy time, man. You come into the train station knowing that there's a creature lurking out there called the Vampire of Dusseldorf that's going to savagely fucking sexually assault you and stab you with scissors and drink your blood. Yeah, I mean, we know the world's fucked up. I mean, but like, it's not like there's like an active vampire. You know what
right.
I'm fucking saying? It's crazy.
I don't
terrifying.
Know. I mean, I was randomly in New Orleans and without even realizing it, bumped into a very prolific serial killer myself.
Really?
Ron Dominique. Yes.
Wow. Well, that's New Orleans. What do you expect?
Yeah, I tell that story in our Ron Dominique episode. Cha-ching. Another plug. But yeah, fucking Ron Dominique, man. But so he led her through the dark park, and then he pinned her to a tree and raped her. And he took his time, but he couldn't get off. And finally she screamed, and that set Peter Curtin off. She had been quiet before, content to let him finish, and so that he might let her live, but he was taking too long. Will you hurry up and finish raping me?
Textbook sadist, man.
Yeah. Yeah, so Peter let her go, and talk about out of the frying pan and into the fire. But at least she survived. At least she walked away from it.
Mm.
And yeah, she'll have a story to tell. I thought I was with the vampire of Dusseldorf, and then I was rescued by the vampire of Dusseldorf, and then he tried to kill me.
Not like, all heroes have bat wings.
Like what a freaking yeah! What oh damn! What a series
crazy
of unfortunate
story,
events.
Yeah.
Maria didn't report the rape, but she did document it in a letter to a friend. Now, this is awesome. She had addressed the letter incorrectly, so it came back to the post office, where a clerk opened it to see if she could find the correct address somewhere in the letter. She
clerks
delivered...
opening your mail is awesome. I love that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in this case, it was. But she was doing her job. She's like, I must get this letter to, all right, female German accent saying, I need to get this letter to its destination.
I must get this letter to my desk to its destination. Yeah.
Thank you. I don't know what's funnier. Me fumbling for the, to try and do the accent that is not coming to me at all, or just like starting to and then handing it off to you.
I'm going to say my quick wit is funnier.
So she delivered the letter to the police, and the police got it to Ernst Gannat. And Maria was brought in for questioning, and she was able to provide a detailed description of Peter.
So, you know, if this is America, it never would have happened, because you have to have a search warrant to open up mail. See these stupid laws in America.
Yeah, stupid
about
laws.
About your freedom and privacy.
Yeah.
You should go back to 1920s German law.
Right.
Where seduction's a crime.
Yeah. And there's a guy who's trying to draw paintings at this point and getting frustrated because he's not that good. And that's not going to spell out very good for the people of Germany or the rest of the world. Yeah, you
I like
think
to draw pictures of buildings.
You think that, God, if that freaking art school had just accepted Adolf Hitler, world history would be drastically different.
Ah, he still would have been an asshole.
But
it's France's fault, and they got what was coming to them. Just kidding. Just kidding.
So in this case,
you know why France made the Arc de Triomphe so big?
Why?
So Hitler could drive his tanks through it. Sorry, French folks out there. Just kidding.
No, in our In our episode on Marcel Petiot, I do a breakdown of the invasion of France by Germany in World War II. So, another plug.
Funny stuff.
Yeah. So, in this case, you know, since the letter was brought to the police and, you know, was able to get Brienne to get the detailed description of Peter. So I guess in this case, paper beat scissors.
There you go. Everything's upside down. Cats and dogs living together.
Living together. So that led them to Peter Curtin's police report, and he was on their radar, obviously, because of his previous arson charges. They went to Peter's apartment, and he arrived home and saw them there, and he bolted away before they saw him. So he returned to his wife, Auguste, and he was depressed, and she wanted to make him feel better. And he told her that he was accused of a rape that he obviously didn't do. I mean, he could get 15 years for that.
He's innocent.
Well,
absolutely innocent, man.
Yeah. Auguste asked him point blank if he had raped her, and he admitted that I did.
Just a little bit?
Just a little bit. It was a gentle rape.
It was just seduction.
Seduction.
Hmm.
So once again, Auguste stood by her man, and she suggested that he get an apartment outside of the city. And she has no clue that he's the vampire of Dusseldorf. And police would still be searching for him. Police would still be searching for the vampire, and they'd forget about Peter. It doesn't work that way, Auguste. Sorry. From May 19th to the 23rd, he didn't leave his apartment, and he knew that the police were on to him about the vampire killings. On the 23rd, he returned home to Auguste, and he confessed everything to her. And she didn't believe him at first until he started giving each and every gory detail of the kills. But why was he doing this? Why was he confessing?
You know, it really depends on who you read from. I mean, people want to say that he was doing it so that she could collect the reward money and because he loved her, and other people will say that he's a fucking disgusting raping psychopath and he doesn't even comprehend the what love is. So it all depends on where you want to go. People always want to romanticize these people.
All right. But there was a huge reward for information leading to his capture. So this is just one story. This, like you were saying. So Auguste reports him, gets the money, and so she would be taken care of while he was in prison for, obviously, for life.
He was a good person.
Yeah, Auguste really was. She was a little naive, but at least she wasn't like Jerry Brudos' wife, who knew everything that was going on and just stood by and did nothing.
She had nice feet.
I mean, Jerry Brudos is one that we're going to cover at some point. So she finally went to the police, and then Gennett and a swarm of officers went and arrested Peter. Peter said that he would cooperate 100% as long as Auguste got the reward money. Obviously this is 1930s Germany. So the Gacy law wasn't in effect there. I don't know. Is there a law in the United States saying that, you know, like a spouse can't collect on reward money? It seems to me there would be.
If they turn them in, I think that they could.
Yeah.
I would assume so.
So,
I mean, you know, it's not, it's the killer profiting after the crimes off of his,
that's the
literary work and stuff. It's a little different.
Yeah, that's the Gacy law, but. No, but Peter confessed to 68 crimes, 9 murders, and 31 attempted murders.
He's been a busy boy.
Huh?
He's been a busy little vampire.
Indeed. But he says that he never tortured any of the children that he killed.
It's true. Sexually mutilating someone with a scissor and raping them and drinking their blood. I mean, that's not torture.
That's not torture. Nah. Peter's a nice guy. He's a gentle rapist.
Gentle.
Fucking fucking asshole.
Yeah, I just raped them with a scissor.
They were small scissors.
I thought about using safety scissors, but there was no point.
Oh, God. Peter decided that he wanted to become a legend. Well, mission accomplished. As the details of his crimes came out, he got a new name, the King of Sexual Perverts.
What a name right there.
The King of Sex. It sounds like a punk band name.
G.G. Allin, the King of Sexual Perverts.
Or at least a punk song.
You know what the original name of Last House on the Left was?
What?
Sex Crime of the Century.
Fits.
It didn't sell. That was the name that they used when they originally put it out. Like,
Midnight
Movies and Drive-Ins.
I agree. Last House on the Left is definitely a better name. But Sex Crime of the Century does fit.
I mean, yeah, when Wes Craven wrote the screenplay, that's what he was going for there. It's funny because it isn't the last house on the left. And if you look in the movie, there's a lot of houses all around it.
Oh, yeah. But,
that name just fit, man. It's something creepy about it.
Yeah. But, I mean, I don't know. I like movies like that where a woman just gets revenge and just destroys the people that, you know.
Yeah, revenge flicks are cool.
Revenge flicks. I love that.
Spit on Your Grave. The I Spit on Your Grave remake, man, that was a wild one.
The first remake was good, but the second two sequels that came after that, they sucked.
I don't even think I saw them.
Don't. I mean,
no.
Yeah. It's just a bunch of, like, literal man bashing. Like if the Lifetime Network were to make an R-rated movie, it would be the two sequels for the remake of Last, or I Spit on Your Grave.
Hmm.
But. So, in court, Peter was put in a shoulder-high cage, and he pled guilty. He says, "I have no remorse as to..." You want to do it? You want to take it?
I think I got it here. Let me see.
I can't do a German accent unless I'm doing a Hitler. I mean, I could do this in my Hitler voice.
I have no remorse. Never have I felt any misgiving in my soul. Never did I think to myself that what I did was bad. Even though human society condemns it, my blood and the blood of my victims must be on the heads of my torturers. The punishments I have suffered have destroyed all my feelings as a human being. That was why I had no pity for my victims. Scary motherfucker.
He also said, I'm just going to do my Hitler voice. Fuck it. Because I can't do a talking voice. I would tell you, thinking back that all the details is not unpleasant. I'd rather enjoy it. Nein, nein, mein Kampf, perfect Nugent. He then said that he had been he then said that he had been unfaithful to his wife and that she had done no wrong. She stood by her man, right or wrong. She stood by her man. A psychiatrist said that 90% of Peter's killings had been sadism, pure and simple, and 10% was due to his rough upbringing.
Man, I don't know how you can separate the two, to be honest. You know what I mean?
Well, you really can. 90% to 10? That's not really separating it.
I mean, his definition of a sadist is crazy.
Yeah.
He physically is unable to fucking sexually climax without screams or and most specifically blood.
Yeah. He should have just become a dentist.
Can you imagine if you're like the dentist is like, okay, I'm going to drill your teeth. Oh, go on here. Oh, man. I mean,
dentists are sadists. Everybody knows that.
Right. Best is Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. Wasn't he the first victim of Audrey?
I can't remember it, to be honest, that well.
I think the dentist was the first victim, I think. But anyway.
Steve Martin. Great, yeah. Iconic role.
Have you seen the original Little Shop of Horrors? The black and white one? Okay.
Yeah, Jack Nicholson's in it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not a musical.
No, it's not. It's actually.
It's a great movie. It's a Roger Corman, I believe.
Yeah, it's like, and Audrey is a lot more scary than comical scary.
Yeah.
But Peter was found guilty on all counts and sentenced to death for all of them. He never appealed. There would be no pardon. And like Panzeram, people lobbied for Curtin to not receive the death sentence. And like Panzeram, Peter told them to fuck off. He wanted Wiener Schnitzel for his last meal with fried potatoes and a bottle of wine. And the night before his execution, he wrote letters to the family of all of his victims apologizing. And then the next morning, he was led to the guillotine. And Peter asked, "You want a ticket?
Tell me, after my head is chopped off, will I be able to hear at least for a moment the sound of my own blood gushing from the stump of my neck? That would be the pleasure to end all pleasures." Much like Albert Fish said pretty much the same thing.
Go biz.
That's how they do it. It's in Hollywood.
But he asked if any. He asked. Okay. Fuck. We're almost done and I'm getting fucking tongue tied. He was asked if he had any last words and he just said, "Nine."
He's like, "The last ones I gave were so good. How can I top that?"
Exactly. So he was beheaded and his body was taken into science. And as World War II ended, an American soldier found his mummified head and brought it back to the U.S. with him. And it's now
as one should.
Exactly. It's now on display.
Taking corpses, bringing them across international borders into another country, displaying them for tourists. That is not a war crime. That is ridiculous.
That's a public
act
service.
Of patriotism. Yeah. That is a good American there. Look what I brought back, a corpse of a serial killer.
Well, the head.
the severed head.
This may have been the precursor of the heads in Futurama.
I mean, you don't know what's going to happen to that head in Germany. If he really is a vampire, there is a chance that there wasn't a stake put through his heart. He could come back to life.
Yeah, true. But
that's a wonderful thing, you know, that man did.
I'm surprised Futurama didn't have Peter Curtin's head in a jar in one of their episodes, because that was like, that's like right there with what they do.
I do have to say, we owe Germany the decapitated head of one of our serial killers. And we've got so many of them. Can't we send them one? Come on.
Give him Ed Gein.
Fair is fair.
We'll give him Ed Gein, because he's at the Ripley's, believe it or not, in Wisconsin. And Wisconsin Dells, Wisconsin.
And honestly, bucket list. I want to see it. I would love to go there to see that.
Well, maybe.
Don't see myself in Wisconsin anytime soon, but yeah, if I'm ever in Wisconsin, I am going to Ripley's, believe it or not. I'm going to check it out.
Yeah.
Get myself a selfie with it. You know, Charlie Manson's girlfriend, Star, wanted to get his body and put it in a glass casket and bring it around the country to carnivals and stuff so people could see it. Have it on display.
I think
that would have been cool.
We covered that one in the Prison Tender episode, I think. I think that was one of the ones that we covered. But
He wouldn't do it. He, you know why? He said
why?
He was never going to die. It was pointless to even talk about.
Yeah,
He,
but
he was
did.
He was
He
wrong,
did.
though.
He did tell that. He did tell that girl to fuck off once he realized how. Yeah, she was just.
It was that.
And of
it
course,
came back to him.
She
he,
was.
Like
She
people
was,
are like, you know, she wants to put your corpse up for display.
He was fucking 26 years old. What 26 year old
smoking.
Woman is gonna have? You know, is gonna be interested in? You know, in a like an 80 year old man.
I think that she genuinely was. I mean, we covered it in an episode and delved into her childhood and her life and everything. And
but did she had
he
did
was
she have
into it.
did she have granddaddy issues?
I guess it. I don't know. He did look pretty good, dude. He didn't look like that. You know what I mean? At the end, when he got really sick, he didn't look good. But even when he was like in his 70s, he still looked like a pretty
I mean,
didn't
I
look
got
bad. And like
I got nothing
he was
bad to
just
say.
Obsessed.
I got nothing bad to say about her. She's that was a that was. But she, hey, if she can pull it off, guess what? She's going to be rich. I got no
he
problem.
He was not able to pull it off. The body went to his grandson.
I know, but I got no problem with what she did or what she tried to do. I have no problem with that. You know, she's, you know.
Plus, she was fucking his best buddy, Grey Wolf. And that shit got out. That was not, I don't think he liked that either.
So, anyway, Peter Curtin. He truly had no pity for victims, and he literally was a fucking monster. And yeah, that's it. That's what I got.
Peter Curtin, the vampire of Dusseldorf, truly a terrifying person.
Indeed, a piece of shit. He was a I don't know. I mean, it. He's definitely one of the worst. I mean, when we, when I started doing, you know, when I started writing this one, I hadn't heard any podcast or anything like that about him in a long time. So it's just like, as I started the research and everything, it was just like, holy crap, this guy, whew, definitely one of the worst.
Yes, indeed.
So.
And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen.
And there you have it. One of the scariest people that we've covered so far. There's more. There's always more. But anyway, thanks a hell of a lot for listening. We appreciate the hell out of it. And thank you once again, Matthew, for filling in.
My pleasure.
I've had a really good time with these two episodes. And who knows? Maybe we'll collab again at some point.
Sounds but, good.
And
if you get a chance, ladies and gentlemen, check out Murder Coaster.
I was getting to that.
Okay.
I was getting to that. I wasn't.
I'm like, he's not going to plug me, this bastard.
No, of course I'm going to. but I'm gonna do even better than that. But seriously, I had a great time these two episodes with you. And they can find your podcast where, you know, Murder Coaster, wherever you listen to podcasts at. But how can we find your books? I mean, we're gonna link them, but still, how can we find your books?
You can go to my website, MatthewVBrockmeyer.com. You can just Google Matthew Brockmeyer. You'll see all kinds of crazy shit pop up there. I've had short stories published all over the whole world, translated into French and Polish and even Greek, different alphabet.
German?
Not that I'm aware of.
Damn
no.
it. Perfect.
I do
Nugent.
Have like a couple German fans though that. They read it in English, I think. And it's also on the Murder Coaster website, www.murdercoasterpodcast.com. There's a link to my and to my lovely co-host Krista's websites. And you can check out all our stuff there.
I'll just link that. I'll just link that rather than posting your links for your books and her links for hers and all that stuff. And I'll just post your podcast at
sure, website. Yeah.
And, but that, you know, that's awesome. But yeah, thanks for listening. Appreciate the hell out of it. You can find our shit on social media, CKC, didn't I do this before? I fucked up when I was giving my own website. CKCBpodcast.com. It has one stop shop. It's got all the episodes. It's got all, you know, links to like every platform. It's got all the socials and everything. So, you know, once again, thanks to, Matthew, and thanks to Krista for letting me borrow Matthew. So, it's been a blast. And until next week, later.
Alvita Jane.